Okay, let us start. Thank you for your patience and apologies for the slight delay in starting. And let me welcome our speaker today, Jesse Vanvoukis. He's a senior economist at the National Bank of Greece and head of the Entrepreneurship and Business Analysis in the Economic Analysis Department of the bank. She is also the research coordinator for the Greek SMEs survey, which is produced by the National Bank of Greece and feeds into the MBG Business Confidence Indicator for SMEs, something which I think is very interesting and hopefully will become data will become more easily available to academic researchers, self-interest noted. She has a very long experience with the bank and in the research department of the bank, and especially on issues relating to entrepreneurship and SMEs. And contributed to research on traditional growth drivers in sectoral studies like in tourism, but also potential growth drivers such as the education sector in Greece. And she's also a representative of the Hellenic Bank Association to the Business Finance Committee of the European Banking Federation and a member of the expert working group of the Hellenic Federation of Enterprises in Greece. And she's going to talk to us today based on a report you published in the bank.
Several
reports on the effects of economic crisis on Greek entrepreneurship. Thank you,
Vasilis. Thank you for the invitation. Thank you all for coming. It's a great honor to be here with you today. In the next 45 minutes, I'm going to share with you some of the most interesting findings from our research at the National Bank of Greece regarding Greek entrepreneurship during the last decade. But I want to start with this guy. Once upon a time, there was a man right here in this city who made all the difference when things got really tough. Sir Winston Churchill rose to the occasion and fought with confidence and great strength. He stood firm and never gave in. Now, I am sure you have all heard stories about how difficult things are in the Greek economy. What I'm going to show you today is that there is a growing wave of Greek entrepreneurs that have held on during the crisis, showing the same kind of determination. Companies that kept on fighting, determined to never surrender. Before we delve into their struggles and their victories during the last decade, let's begin by trying to gauge the magnitude of the problem that Greek enterprises have faced. Now, Churchill was standing up against a strong military opponent. Greek enterprises are standing up against a faltering economy. As you can see in the left graph, Greek economy has been growing by a healthy annual average rate of 4% since the 1960s. This upward trend came to an abrupt end in 2009. From 2009 to 2013, GDP was falling by an average annual rate of 5%, getting the economy back to the level of 2000, where we still remain stuck, unfortunately. However, during the roller coaster of the past two decades, the path each sector followed varied significantly. In the right table, I have tried to categorize the economy sectors into three groups: the good, the bad, and the ugly. Let's start with the good ones. The sectors that have actually produced higher value added during the crisis, that is, the oil industry and the primary sector. The second group, the bad ones, is actually an interesting case. Sectors like tourism and transport have been hit by the crisis, but they have managed to preserve most of the gains of the previous prosperity years. That wasn't the case for the third group, the ugly ones. In sectors like trade, manufacturing, and construction, the losses of the crisis years more than counterbalanced the gains of the prosperity years. At this point, it is important to note that there are also large differences inside those broad sectors. For example, food manufacturing has proven resilient during the crisis, while the largest losses in the industry segment have stemmed from the textiles. In this shrinking economy, employment suffered a terrible blow, with a reduction of more than 800,000 available jobs. As a result, domestic demand lost more than 50 billion euros. That is more than one third of its pre-crisis level. In this environment, unemployment skyrocketed to 28%. Now, let me remind you what Eichengreen has said about the crisis of the 1930s. The 24% unemployment reached at the depths of the Great Depression was no picnic. 24% at the depth of the Great Depression. We went even higher than that, by 4 percentage points, and unemployment has stayed in those high levels for a much longer time relative to what had happened in the Great Depression in the US. Unemployment in Greece remained above 24% for more than 4 years, while in the US it had remained at those high levels for less than a year. Having said that, I would like to point out that there are currently consistent signs that the worst is behind us. During the past 2 years, the business climate in Greece is improving, with sentiment indices increasing by more than 15 points and currently stand in positive territory, that is indicating expansionary expectations. More importantly, business investment is reviving. In fact, it is slowly converging to its pre-crisis annual level of around 20 billion euros, a level that has been halved during the crisis years. On the same note, industrial production has increased by 6% during the past 12 months and is expected to increase by more than 10% during the next 12 months. That is according to the industry's order book. So, I think it is fair to say that the revival is here. Now, the key question is its dynamism and sustainability. Although the answer partly depends on the broader economic and political landscape, the current operational state of Greek entrepreneurship is also of paramount importance. This is the point we are going to focus. I will argue that Greek enterprises that have survived the crisis are now fundamentally stronger and can be the basis for a new growth model for Greece. Now, let's see what has changed in the Greek corporate sector during the crisis years. In the left graph, you can see that large companies have slightly increased their share in the Greek business sector. However, the most important change is captured in the right graph. That is the increase of the tradable sector share in the total business sales. As you can see in the left graph here, this shift towards the tradable sectors is even more pronounced in terms of profits generated. And as you can see in the right graph, the capital employed is lagging behind this shift. Thus, we're expecting considerable investment and disinvestment actions in the coming years. So, you could say that from a microeconomic point of view, a healthy restructuring has occurred in the Greek economy towards the tradable sectors. However, there is also another important improvement which is visible in the microeconomic level and is related to the operational efficiency of the Greek companies. Before I get into this, allow me to remind you some key financial ratios. The main profitability ratio is the EBITDA margin, which actually combines the gross profit margin that is mainly related to variable costs, such as raw materials, and other operational costs mainly related to fixed costs, such as rents. Assets turnover measures the capacity of capital employed to generate sales. Capital employed includes both fixed assets, such as machinery, and current assets, such as cash and account receivables, that is the money the company is owed from its clients. By combining these two ratios, we get the operational return on assets, which actually measures the capacity of capital employed to generate profits. In the next slides, I will show you the path of these three ratios for the Greek business sector versus a European average. I will start with profitability ratios. In this slide, you can see the path of gross profit margin in Greece and in the EU during the past decade. Remember that gross profit is mainly related to variable costs. During the crisis years, Greek enterprises have become leaner and more cost-effective, as their gross profit margin has improved considerably, indicating efficiency in terms of variable cost management. However, the abnormal low level of domestic demand, which results in high fixed costs, more than counterbalances these efficiency gains. Therefore, the EBITDA margin, which takes into account both variable, which is better, and fixed costs, which are worse, remains lower relative to its pre-crisis level. Now, let's see what has happened to the assets turnover ratio, that is the capacity of capital employed to generate sales. The decrease in accounts receivable, the money owed from the clients to the company, has lowered working capital needs and thus has increased the assets turnover of the Greek companies. The gap you still observe in the right graph reflects again the abnormal low level of domestic demand, which squeezes the capacity utilization of Greek companies' fixed assets. By combining the path of these two ratios, profitability and assets turnover, we get the path of the operational return on assets. It is actually their product, as we saw earlier. In the right graph, you can see that a large gap of around 5 percentage points has been created between the Greek companies and the EU average during the crisis. The good news is that almost half of this gap has already closed, and as I will show you later on, the convergence will continue in the coming years. So, two main conclusions so far. One, the structure of the Greek business sector has become more competitive. And two, Greek companies have increased their operational efficiency. That was the big picture. Now let's focus on the SME segment, which is the backbone of the Greek economy. Despite their significance, the availability and reliability of data for SMEs is very limited, especially for the micro enterprises. In order to fill this gap, we conduct a survey twice a year on a sample of 1,200 SMEs. In the next two slides, I will present you the most interesting findings of our surveys. In this slide, you can see why SMEs are so important for the Greek economy. There are 780,000 SMEs in Greece, generating a turnover of around 120 billion euros, covering 76% of the business sector employment, compared to just 50% in the EU. SMEs' contribution to GDP accounts for 25%, with their contribution being most noted in tourism, trade, services, and construction. Now, let's see what happened during the crisis. Around 250,000 SMEs have closed, resulting in an output loss of almost 25 billion euros. While the sales of the surviving SMEs have plummeted by 30%. Now, the surviving SMEs fall into two categories. We have the old SMEs that produce about 70 billion euros, that is half their pre-crisis level, and we also have the new SMEs, that is companies that were large companies before the crisis. Those companies produce around 20 billion euros. And finally, we have around 150,000 new companies that produce around 15 billion euros. The signs of revival that we previously saw being captured by indicators for the whole economy are also evident in the SME segment. The index of business confidence, constructed from our survey data, is reviving to positive levels in all sectors with the exception of construction. Employment expectations verify the positive outlook, as you can see in the left graph. Moreover, as you can see in the right graph, the majority of SMEs report having adopted a growth strategy. This share was just 20% 5 years ago. Now I think it's around 54, if I remember correctly. Now, let's dig in to the most interesting conclusions of our surveys. That is what has changed in the SME segment during the crisis. Improvement number one. Greek SMEs have become more resilient to shocks. The imposition of capital controls to the Greek economy has challenged them enormously, but eventually, as we'll see, made them stronger. As you can see in the left graph, only half of the segment faced severe problems 15 months after the imposition of the capital controls, when this share was almost 90% during the first months after the shock. That is, almost 40% of the segment has improved its operational flexibility. This achievement should be evaluated against the breadth of the problems they have faced, which ranged from issues concerning supply of raw materials to transportation of goods to customers' orders. So, as you can see, what they achieved is quite noteworthy. Their achievement appears even more remarkable if you consider that a year after the imposition of the capital controls, their emergency liquidity caution, that is, cash outside the banking system, was gone. However, Greek SMEs, against all odds, have managed to survive. In fact, the majority of them reports that now they have become flexible enough to have mastered the ability for a quick recovery from any shock. The imposition of capital controls in Greece had another positive side effect. It has triggered a digital advancement of the business sector. As you can see in the left graph, POS terminal availability has increased, while, as you can see in the right graph, the use of e-banking has also increased. And that was only the beginning. Investment, both realized and planned, are expected to narrow significantly the digital gap between Greece and Europe during the next 2 years. As you can see in the right graph, the convergence is evident both in terms of internal operating systems, such as the ERP, as well as in terms of e-commerce tools. The graphs in this slide illustrate the economic benefits of this digital advancement. In fact, the digital upgrade, as you can see in the left graph, provided 3 percentage points of annual sales growth across all sectors during the crisis. In addition, digital upgrade also provided 9 percentage points of higher profitability to Greek SMEs. Improvement number 3. Greek SMEs have become more export-oriented during the crisis. I will present you 2 case studies on this issue, manufacturing and tourism. Let's start with manufacturing extroversion, that is, exports of goods. Riding on the EU growth, Greek exports have increased by 19% during the crisis. In fact, there were high growth products like food and chemicals, which increased by 40%. And there were low growth products like textiles and ferrous metals, which remained almost stagnant or even decreased. These diverse patterns largely reflect the adoption of different strategies. Let's take the example of the food industry. In the right side of the scatter, you can see the food products that Greece has a competitive advantage. In the upper right side, you can see the champions. That is the products that have gained market share during the crisis. However, if you look closely enough, that is, check the path of relative prices, you will see that there are 2 distinct groups in that category. The real champions that have really gained market shares and the ones that actually bought market share by decreasing their prices to extreme lows. The strategy of the real champions, such as yogurt and olives, is clear. Sell branded products in high-income markets. The opposite strategy, that is selling bulk products to low-income markets, is followed mainly by fruit exporters. This strategy leads to negative outcomes, that is, first buying market share, and eventually, as the penetration rises, losing it. That was just a case study. Similar results are also evident in other sectors of the economy. Now, let's focus again on the SME segment. During the crisis, the share of exporting SMEs have increased by almost 10 percentage points. What is more interesting is a mapping of the SME segment based on the company's extroversion. You can see that in the right graph. We have identified 5 types of enterprises. There are 3 groups of high interest: the strategic exporters, that is the most dynamic part, the rising exporters, that is the strategic to be exporters, and the possible exporters, that is the rising to be exporters. As you can see, these 3 waves of exporters cover half of the SME segment. The other half is comprised by enterprises that either are exclusively focused on the domestic market or are exporting only occasionally, with no intention to include extroversion to their strategic goals. As you can see in the left graph, both strategic and rise in exporters have increased their extroversion significantly during the crisis. Strategic exporters now export 36% of their sales, up from 26% before the crisis, while rising exporters now export 13% of their sales, up from 8% before the crisis. What is extraordinary is the footprint these companies left to the Greek economy. This is illustrated in the right graph. The two bottom columns show that the weak SMEs exporters, that is, either exporters that didn't survive, or SMEs that just export occasionally, have actually decreased their exports by 2 billion euros during the crisis. Large companies have filled in this gap. So, up to this point of analysis, Greek exports would have remained at their pre-crisis level. It was on the dynamic SMEs exporters to set the trends, that is, strategic and rising exporters. And they did, quite successfully, as you can see. They have increased their exports by 1.5 billion euros during the crisis, that is more than doubling their volume. And this increase fed through the economy, leading exports to increase to 16 billion euros in 2016, up from 14.6 billion euros in 2008. Do Greek SMEs have more hidden dynamics? Actually, they do. Remember that rising exporters are on the path of becoming strategic, and possible exporters are on the path of becoming first rising and then strategic. You can see the projected extroversion trends in the left graph. In case these trends would be realized, the Greek SME segment could double its export production and provide an extra 4 billion euros to the Greek economy. That is more than 2% of our GDP. Now, let's turn to the second case study of increased extroversion, tourism sector. Tapping into the dynamism of foreign tourist inflows, the tourism sector proved resilient, providing 14.6 billion euros in tourism receipts to the Greek economy in 2017, up from 11.6 billion euros in 2008. However, two structural problems continue to weigh down the Greek tourism sector, that is, low tourist quality and high seasonality. If these two issues should be corrected, significant dynamism would be unleashed. Problem number one, low tourist quality. While Greek hotels have upgraded significantly their infrastructure, with five-star hotels covering 17% of the sector, up from 9% in 2006, the quality of foreign tourists in Greek hotels remain low, with only 23% being high-income tourists. This phenomenon partly reflects the fact that Greece attracts many tourists from its neighboring Balkan region, who, as you can see in the right graph, have a very low level of daily expenditure. Problem number two, high seasonality. Almost 80% of foreign tourists visit Greece during the summer months. This ratio is around 60% in other Mediterranean destinations. The high seasonality keeps the capacity utilization of Greek hotels down to 27% compared to 41% in other Mediterranean countries. This development actually decreases the capacity of the capital employed in Greek hotels to generate sales. What would happen if we could correct those two issues? What would happen if we could drive seasonality and tourist quality towards the Mediterranean standards? According to our estimates, it would increase annual tourism receipts by almost 6 billion euros. That is more than 3% of our GDP. What would it take to achieve this result? A coherent, targeted countries policy and extra investment of around 10 billion euros in cumulative basis, according to our estimates. Therefore, the question is, can Greece attract these extra capital flows? And if yes, under which conditions and in what time frame? According to our model's estimates, land reforms could be the major driver of increased tourism investment. Major land reforms include the conversion of the national cadastre, the clarification of the spatial planning laws, and the specification of land uses throughout Greece. Specifically, these land reforms, combined with a coherent FDI policy and the normalization of access to finance conditions, could attract an extra capital of more than 3 billion euros annually. Therefore, our target of 10 billion euros could be achieved in a three-year period. So, the external component of Greek tourism has improved during the crisis, and there is room and potential for further improvement. The main conclusion from our surveys is that during the crisis, Greek SMEs have become stronger, that is, more resilient to shocks, more digitally advanced, and more export-oriented. This is the current state of play in the Greek business sector. Now I would like to conclude this seminar with some thoughts about the future. I will focus on two questions. How the expected revival of domestic demand will affect the Greek enterprises? And which are the long-term forces of growth that could be unleashed through institutional reforms? According to our GDP forecasts, domestic demand will increase by 10% during the next 3 years. Under this scenario, the two main current limitations of Greek enterprises, that is, high fixed costs and low capacity utilization, will be lessened. Therefore, this limited revival of domestic demand, covering just one-fifth of the crisis losses, will be enough for the return on assets of Greek enterprises to converge to the European average. Let's see which sectors will benefit more from this revival of domestic demand. In this sector analysis, I will use two dimensions: the current gap of Greek return on assets versus the European average, and the projected gap after the 10% revival of domestic demand. In this context, I define three groups of sectors: the already competitive, that is, sectors with already high return on assets; the fundamentally strengthened, that is, sectors with high return on assets after the revival of domestic demand; and the weak, that is, sectors with lower return on assets even after the revival. In this slide, you can see what this scatter reveals for the small enterprises. You can see that sectors like chemicals, IT, and hotels will achieve a competitive advantage versus their European counterparts. Here you can see the same analysis for the medium enterprises. Sectors like transport, food, and minerals are expected to achieve an advantage versus their European competitors. And the large enterprises, sectors like non-ferrous metals will achieve a competitive advantage versus the European counterparts, while sectors like oil and plastics are already more competitive. This slide summarizes our sector analysis. The already competitive sectors of the Greek economy cover 13% of sales and 22% of profits, while the fundamentally strengthened sectors cover one-third of sales and 42% of profits. I have described the effects of the revival of domestic demand to the SMEs that have survived the crisis. However, there is also another side effect. SMEs that have relocated abroad may return back to Greece, inversing the trend observed in the previous decade. What you see in the left graph is something that you already know or could have guessed. SMEs left Greece mainly due to high taxation. Note that only 4% left in search for new markets. What you see in the right graph is something more interesting about the SMEs that have relocated abroad. While they produce almost 80% of their turnover abroad, they sell the largest share of it back to Greece. With the ties to the Greek market remaining so strong, the expected revival of domestic demand might trigger the return home, as transport costs and proximity to main market considerations might counterbalance the tax differential. Apart from these short-run effects stemming from the revival of domestic demand, the most important issue is the long-run potential of Greek entrepreneurship. Institutional reform, especially in the legal and judicial framework, could unlock the competitive advantages of Greek entrepreneurship. To support this point, I will use a case study. Let's take the example of the IT sector. As you can see in the left scatters, the institutional framework in each country is highly correlated with the creation, first graph, and the growth, second graph, of tech startups. Greece, with its capital city of Athens, is at the bottom of both these charts. The institutional framework also affects the formation of clusters, as you can see in the right scatter. And the participation of IT companies in cluster formation have growth-generating results. As you can see in the right bar chart, the participation in a cluster provides a sales growth multiplier of 3 to 4, a result observed both in European studies as well as in our survey for the Greek SMEs during the crisis. So, what an institutional reform could mean for the Greek IT sector? According to our estimates, the convergence of the Greek institutional framework to the European standards could increase IT cluster sales by 1 billion euros and tech startup sales by 3 billion euros annually. These results would be achieved as Greece would ride the curves of the scatters we saw in the previous slide towards the EU averages. This is a slide that summarizes the main institutional challenges with a high impact on Greek entrepreneurship. These involve mainly the legal and judicial framework, land issues, and the collaboration of academia with the business sector. By examining several global competitiveness indices from various sources, like the Doing Business or the World Economic Forum, we have identified that these three areas stand out as the key areas where Greece ranks low. The most important one is the legal and judicial framework, with by far the largest gap against the EU average. For example, the time required for enforcing contracts is 4.4 years in Greece versus an EU average of 1.7 years. Secondly, the issue of property rights is also of high importance. For example, the time required for a first court decision is more than 3 years in Greece versus an EU average of less than 18 months. Finally, the link between the academia and the business sector, which is a key issue for innovation and sustainable growth, is very weak in Greece. You can see that both in the low percentage of researchers employed in the business sector, as well as by the low level of patent applications. I would like to conclude this presentation with this guy. I'm sure most of you have heard Mr. Taleb and his theories on anti-fragility. Anti-fragility is beyond resilience or robustness. The resilient resists shocks and stays the same. The antifragile gets better. This idea is highly applicable to Greece, and it is related to what we have talked about today. In fact, the main message from our research is that a large share of Greek SMEs didn't just survive the crisis, they became stronger because of it. I would also like to point out another idea that Mr. Taleb has advanced in his books. He writes, "Entrepreneurship is a risky and heroic activity, necessary for growth or even the mere survival of the economy. We Greeks are historically a nation of heroic nature, and I think that the recent crisis had been a reminder to our true identity. What I want to say is that entrepreneurship has the natural propensity to flourish in Greece, especially as the institutional burdens will be lessened. And this makes me feel optimistic about the road ahead." Thank you for your attention. If you want to stay updated on the issue of Greek entrepreneurship, you can email me, and I will happily include you in our mailing list.
Just thank you very much for the presentation. I'm trying to figure out when I had something, you know, as close to optimistic as you were. You know, I don't think I ever.
I was a little biased on the positive facts because I know the analysis for Greece is mostly biased towards the negative. So I want to balance the record.
So I think there's also questions from the audience, maybe on you know, testing your optimism about Greece. I would like to see a show of hands if somebody wants to ask questions. Or while you collect your thoughts, then I will fire a question on that optimism. So, you know, the other way of saying, you know, what you concluded with at the end was like, you know, whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And there's two aspects to that. One is a creaming off effect, you know, the weak die, and then the average becomes better because...
It has happened.
Yes.
The economy.
And the other one is more close to Taleb's thing that, you know, like you become stronger and better, you don't just survive and stay, but you actually become better. And I mean, you know, there's a lot of information in the graphs you're showing about, in a way, both aspects of it. But if you get out of the graphs, can you, I mean, you know, out of the kind of the hard data, if you want, can you tell us what you think is now better? I mean, you know, you're saying, okay, you know, the remaining or the new SMEs have a higher exposure propensity than, you know, the previous SMEs. Why? So what is, you know, if you look at the qualitative thing, what do you think from your information, from these comments, what makes them better? Is it like, you know, more desperate people, or is it like, you know, people who have been abroad and, you know, they have links and things? So
I think they tried more. They tried more because survival was an issue, a big issue, and they knew if they couldn't do their best, they couldn't survive. So they did their best.
Is it sustainable then? I mean, you know, because your projections say, okay, you know, if the rising stars become strategic exporters, then, you know, things will be better. But then in a way, isn't it that, you know, okay, there's no domestic demand, so I really don't want to internationalize my market, but I have to do it. And then if the market picks up and, you know, again, we have nice, cheap money offered by the banks, then I will go back to my domestic market.
Yes, but we have lived this period, so I think maybe... we will be more cautious if it happens again. I mean, they answered to us that they are ready to adapt flexibly to any shock from now on. I think it's a change in their history, if I could say that, in their culture.
Or the too optimistic as well.
I'll tell you something about the too optimistic. We do the survey twice a year. Every time I find three different groups of companies. it is one third, more or less, with Sachs. It's true. Yeah. It's true. I will not cover it. But there is one fourth, I would say, that is excellent. And I think that we focus only on the bad stuff. This is what I wanted to say here. It's also good stuff in Greece happening. Yes, we have problems. Yes, we have to face them and improvement and do whatever we have to do. But the enterprises that are really exceptional. And when you see averages, you don't see them. This is what I tried to, you know, point out here.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Thank you very much for your presentation. The data are great and they help a lot to think about all this optimistic view, which I appreciate, even if it's a bit biased. But my question is in the same line. I mean, the why, and especially the role that policies may have played. Have there been any attempts, for example, to attract tourism from the policies from the government, or have there been any attempts to introduce these food companies to external markets? I mean, I have trouble thinking, but maybe I'm too pessimistic, that this happens spontaneously in such an adverse context. And my other question has to do with the survey, which I find very interesting. Is it a panel survey? I mean, do you have the same enterprises all the time? For example, if some of them decide to move abroad, do you keep having them available in your sample, or those who stop existing? Can you know how many of them die, so to say? I mean, or is it just a random sample, and in that sense you cannot exactly compare every survey to each other?
Okay. Your first question. I think there isn't some policies that help those people do those things. Some people just try hard. That's why it's just one fourth. And if the reforms that should happen to the economy materialize, then you should see the real strength of those companies. This is a personal point of view. Now, regarding the survey, we do a stratified analysis. We have 102,000 enterprises in each survey with the same characteristics, not the same companies. So we have four sectors, six sizes, so we have 24 sub-segments, and we try to have at least 40 observations in each subset. And then we take the weights of the economy and we find the averages. So each time we have, let's say, an accurate picture of the SMEs that have survived. We don't know anything about the companies that didn't make it. It was clear.
So the death... So the percentage you were showing about firms dying was taken
from our data. It was not from our data. But it was Eurostat, I think, data.
Okay. Yes?
Ms. Vondaki, I got really impressed with the presentation, especially with the statistics and all this data. I've got hundreds of questions, but I'm trying to focus on a single one.
I'm waiting your email then.
I think that the dimension of entrepreneurship has to be interpreted as both from an internal point of view and an external point of view. So if you would like to say that we have increased productivity or you have increased the gross margin, that has happened just from an internal point of view to the detriment of employment. And that's why the profitability has increased, because they, instead of reinvesting that lost employment back to the company, actually it has gone to the general administrative costs, that's for sure. The other thing was that the price increase has been accepted by the retail market just because it was already plummeted by one third of the about 30%. I mean, the retail market has been plummeted by 30%, and that's why the suppliers have been reduced. The market has been concentrated, and that's why we had that increase of gross margin, because these suppliers have increased their prices, so they didn't have any kind, any alternative route to increase the profitability. And that's why that profitability was an internal one. The external one wasn't there. They've reduced their turnover tremendously. They had much more problems with tax legislation and social security as well. And that's why the company was not becoming stronger in that climate. They have just reduced over the board, and they had a complete blanket approach over cost leadership. So that cost leadership was just a random and enforced decision. Was not a conscious strategy. I think so. So my question is, the cash flow, the liquidity, the ACID ratio, the variance in ACID ratio, that would be very interesting for us to see. What would be the divergence between assets and liabilities, and how this has been changed over time from 2008 to 2017?
Okay.
It's one question.
Sorry about that.
As first a clarification, the profit margins and the return on assets I have shown you, it's on an EBITDA level, not after taxes and social securities. Yeah. So it's just operational. Sure, if you take into account taxes, it will be much lower, just to clarify this point. Regarding the size issue that you have mentioned, this improvement in gross profit margin happened in all sizes. I mean, if you took a company of 1 million turnover before the crisis and a company of 1 million turnover after the crisis, the company of today has a better gross profit margin than the one before, even if they are on the same size. Regarding employment, I think that companies didn't fire so easily and so many people. They have tried their best.
Yeah.
And according to our surveys, even before revival has started, around 2.5 years ago, they have started to hire people. And we saw an increase in their wages, which was extraordinary.
Yeah.
An increase in employment. Employment expectations increased before demand picked up.
But that was a recirculation of employees. That they are coming into the business at a much lower wage. And unfortunately, because of the media coverage, the business owners have been terrified, and they have not only reduced their wages week per week or month per month, but have also made a series of layoffs just in order to increase the profitability. So in that respect, I think it would be very interesting to see the relationship between employment lost and increase in current assets versus liabilities. That would reflect the focus of the SME on increasing their profitability internally, but not externally. That's my point. And possibly they didn't have even the capital expenditure, they wasn't there so as to reinvest back, so as to increase the turnover, so as to increase the investment.
Yeah, investment, it's true. I didn't state a lot on this graph, but it's actually saying that gross margin isn't a high share of GDP.
Mm.
at this point just at the EU level.
Yeah.
I don't think that the Greek entrepreneurs
okay, but then you see that it increased significantly.
Yeah, but
also there was a shift from wages to go.
You are right, but to EU averages.
But we're not typically EU. We
so
we
just
have
saying.
Benchmarking, yeah.
Just saying.
EU,
they have to be competitive in the EU market. So I don't know. I don't think they, you know, try to burden employees over their profits.
Well, yes, but then, I mean, you know, okay, so just coming to that, the counter-argument would be that in a country which is, I don't know, 30% pensions, if 20% is, no, if 60% is profits, that's a lot, you know, in a country
business,
which is 10%.
This is business.
No, no, but the denominator
GDP.
Is
business GDP.
Is
yeah, it's only business sector GDP.
Business sector GDP.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I give you this. Yes, a question
at
the back.
If I can pick back up on the employment issue. I'm not sure what is the exact minimum wage right now in Greece. I think it's something, I don't know, maybe
five or six euros,
something like that.
Less
how much of that productivity, not productivity, the competitiveness is part of the suppressed wages? And how do you think that, I don't know, competitiveness can be sustained if the minimum wage rises? It cannot be kept at five euros for sure.
It depends on how it will rise in relation with the rise in demand, I think.
What part would you say, based on your knowledge, that part of that competitiveness is because of the relatively competitive wages in the other way around?
I think, as we saw in the... I won't try to find it now... in the food manufacturing sector, the companies that did better had different strategies, especially regarding their extroversion. They had branded products targeting high-income markets. So I think their competitive advantage is not merely lower wages. It's something more than that. Plus, our wages are even now higher compared to our neighbors, let's say.
Like who?
Like all the Balkan countries around us.
But on the other hand, we are being compared against the EU framework.
Yeah. You're right.
Greece was, I think, the ninth country in the European Union. Bulgaria is the... I don't think that comparison is a fair one.
With the neighbors.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, but if you see the relocation trends, it was towards those countries. We're competing with these countries for business. It's our reality.
I have a tax question. Do you think that entrepreneurs are going to start moving to potentially those cheaper Balkan countries where they can sort of set up shop and not have to pay very high tax on their earnings?
They have done it in the past.
Yeah.
Around 5% of our SMEs have relocated during the crisis. I think this trend has now, I wouldn't say stopped, but it has been less severe, let's say.
So it might inverse.
Excuse me?
It's slowing,
yeah.
The trend? Are you seeing anyone sort of move back into the domestic market, or is that...?
I'm hoping to see that. I'm hoping. We haven't seen it yet.
Okay.
But if domestic demand revives, because their largest share of sales is to the Greek market, I think that this might counterbalance the tax differential. Might. We don't know that. We know that the trend has slowed.
Yeah. Again, to follow on the taxation, I was a bit surprised that you mentioned, I think, particularly in the ICT sector, or generally that 80% of the firms, 80% of the firms declared the tax issue as the reason why they moved out.
Yeah. It was from all SMEs.
From all SMEs. Maybe it's my problem of what is the stereotypical SME in my head. But it is the SME that doesn't separate between business revenue and family income. And then taxation is not business taxation, but it's kind of personal income tax for self-employed people.
Yeah.
And I, how can I say, so I wonder whether for the people who are not in this category, for the businesses whose owners are not in this category, but are rather the people who actually employ other people and reinvest their profits, whether for those guys taxation is equally or nearly as important. You know, because you have a group of SMEs, with some of which where the family business is overrepresented, and for them taxation is very big because you have a very high taxes with the crisis. But for actual businesses, or more than areas, whatever, taxation didn't go. It is higher, but
it
didn't go up as much as with the self-employed.
But it is higher.
Yeah. So do you think, so the companies that are more likely to actually reinvest their profits, do you think that the percentage is, of the ones that think taxation is the biggest issue, is the percentage high among the reinvesting companies as well?
Well, it was 80% in our sample.
Yeah.
Our sample is weighted with sales. So freelancers are actually around 20 to 30%. So I think that this outcome could be because of them.
Because for them, taxation would be, labor cost would be not an issue.
You're right, you're right. I think maybe for them it was 100% the main reason.
Yeah.
But even for the other companies, taxation is an important issue.
Okay.
According to their answers.
Yes. Yeah. I want to over-intake it. There was a question here.
Thanks for the presentation, which was very interesting. Perhaps like Vasilis, I'm not here to undermine the optimism, but on several occasions you were using benchmarks and two stood out. For example, you said that if in the tourism sector Greek hotels were to achieve the same occupancy in terms of seasonality of other Mediterranean countries, then there would be this GDP gain.
Yeah, excluding France. We have France.
And then there was another example where, in terms of legal and judicial constraints, if Greece was to achieve the EU average in those respects, then there'd be another GDP gain. I wonder how much of the optimism that you were giving us would be erased if we didn't make the optimistic assumptions about Greece achieving seasonality levels similar to Mediterranean countries, or legal and judicial reform. That must be a simple thing in the Greek case, surely. similar to the EU average. If you took away those particular points in terms of optimism, do we still have optimism in other parts of your analysis?
I'll tell you. I think that when I use a benchmark, this is not an estimate or a forecast. It's actually the potential, which may never be materialized. It's actually what is the cost of not being reformed.
Yes.
So I think that all those numbers are actually costs. apart from that, the changes in resilience, in extroversion, and in digital advancement, I think they're real. They have happened. So those three are, I think, there are the sources of my optimism for the future. The other estimates are just estimates of our problem, if I could say that. definitely not my forecast.
We got you to admit to this. The optimism was 2 months.
No, no, that was not optimism, really. It was just with the institutional framework that we have, how many gains and growth we are losing. This is what I wanted to point out.
Can I pick up on what you're saying about resilience and SME resilience? One of the kind of pieces of evidence you put forward in order to say that SMEs are resilient was this thing about how important capital controls were 3 months after and 15 months after.
Yeah, yeah.
And this assumes two things. One, the benchmark then is zero adjustment, so if there is a bit of adjustment, then you present it as positive news. And the other thing is that actually capital controls were relaxed quite a lot over, I don't know, the exact dates of the survey, but within a year...
Not particularly during that period. Now they're very relaxed,
yes,
indeed.
Yeah.
But during the 2 periods that we have surveyed, I think there was not a significant difference for the companies.
For the companies,
for the
yes,
companies.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so, I mean... So, one of, anecdotally, what I know is that a lot of people, especially in the first period of the capital controls, were using PayPal.
Yeah.
And that was the immediate thing. You know, if you're not, very experienced with IT, whatever, payment systems, PayPal, very simple, and you do your business thing. So, do you know from the survey, or also anecdotally, I don't know, how many firms are actually... not only, you know, reporting that, I'm coping with the capital controls and don't mind, but actually they have different systems, over the internet, who knows, bitcoins and things, but, you know, other systems that they give them actual resilience because they do not rely solely on either the banking system or cash in hand kind of payments.
Yeah. We know they have increased their in-banking use. POS terminal availability, and it has triggered a digital advancement, both to e-commerce, which also is helpful in those cases, as well as internal systems. So I think, yes, I think they have changed. They have understood that it is better to have to have such a dependence on cash.
Mm. Okay, good. Return to the optimism. Any other questions from the floor, or I will throw my last theoretical question. But
just one question to develop my former question about the survey. Your narrative is one of adaptation, but since the companies are not the same in all the surveys, would it not be a question of the survival of the fittest?
It's part of the equation.
So it's not that the companies adopt e-banking more and more, but that the ones that survive are the ones that had already adopted.
No, in some surveys we ask the same company at the same survey, do you use e-banking now? Okay. Yes. Have you used it 5 years ago? No. So in some cases we have the same company answering, so we don't have this bias. In banking and POS availability, it was this kind of questions.
Okay, so let me ask my other question. So, in Schumpeterian, theory, you have this idea of creative distraction, and in a way, you need to have the distraction in order to have the creation. So it's not that, you know, something exogenous happens and then things change, hopefully to the better or in a different direction. It is that the distraction is a requirement for the creation. And in a way, that also means that there's some sort of blockages that, you know, sort of limit the transformation into the new sectors or whatever. So can you be even more optimistic and say that, you know, this is something that has unblocked old blockages? So in a way, the crisis was necessary in order to unleash... you know, both the entrepreneurial spirit, but also, you know, unblock specific institutional or other kind of blockages, and which would then make me more convinced that this is more permanent sustainably.
I think that what you said has happened. It happened in the hard way. Maybe it could have happened in another way. Maybe it was not the only way, but it happened in this way. It's true, I think. And the institutional challenges and reforms who will materialize in the next years, I think they will be important, and the potential that we have talked about, at least a part of it, will be unleashed.
Yeah.
I remain optimistic.
I cannot convert you.
Could I just, this may be a very ignorant question, but does this survey provide us with information about the SMEs' improvement in relation to actual structural reforms that have taken place during the last year? That is, that can we establish some kind of cause and effect between the reforms under the various memoranda and the performance of SMEs, and is this recognized by SMEs or not?
We're trying to do just that in our next survey, so
stay tuned.
Yeah.
We look forward to the report, the next report. Okay, our speaker has to leave early soon after, and I think we can stop here, but before I ask you to join me in thanking Jessica Vavuki, I have to make two announcements, and I shouldn't forget. Our next seminar in this series is in 2 weeks' time, on the 20th of February, Tuesday, same place, same time, 6 o'clock. Claire Economidou from the University of Piraeus in Greece will talk on a quite related issue, mobility of high-skilled individuals, local innovation and entrepreneurship activity in Greece. So you're all welcome to join us in 2 weeks' time here on Tuesday. And then the week after, the Tuesday after, on the 27th of February, we have a big open public lecture by Minister Nikos Papas, Minister of Telecommunications and Media in Greece, who's going to talk on the very interesting topic of fake news, propaganda in social media in Greece. The event is ticketed, so if you're interested, you have to visit our website, find the Eventbrite link, and then apply for a ticket. On that note, Jesse, thank you very much for the presentation and
thank
the very interesting discussion.
And thanks
for-